Blog Talk Radio.
What's the topic? We'll never run out of options. Fatherhood to justice, O'Shea and Mark drops the knowledge. These are times where we try for a peace of mind, organize and then reignite with these words from the other side.
We're two good brothers, unpacked, meaningful conversations centered in solutions that transmute the systemic energy of being black in America, where each episode is packed with inspirational messages and thought-provoking special guests. Come join us on the other side.
You're listening to E-Water Radio, K-E-W-R-D-B.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of E-Water Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of E-Water Radio, K-E-W-R-D-B, or its affiliates.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome back to On the Other Side. We have an exciting show. I'm excited about all our shows, brother, but I'm specifically looking forward to this show. And of course, everyone, I'm talking to my partner in knowledge, O'Shea Lugia, who's with us on the other side. Am I right about that, brother?
Indeed, brother. I am here on the other side, man. Every time I leave from on the other side, I want to do everything I can to get back on the other side. So I'm happy to be here, brother.
It's a family journey to get back on the other side. And I know that, brother, because in practice, it's what they say is what makes perfect, brother. Just because you get a glimpse or you welcome yourself to the other side, it doesn't mean that you stay there, right? It means that you have understanding of what it's like, and now you have to make sure you maintain whatever you're doing to stay there. So,
Absolutely, so I
get what you're saying, brother. But before we jump into our show, but as always, we just want to just take a moment and really acknowledge, man. And this time, I just one acknowledgement, and I just want to expand that. I want to talk a little bit about the loss that Regina King suffered this past week. Her son, Ian, committed suicide. And as I thought about her, man, they were very close, you know, and I thought about my relationship with my mother and how she would have felt. But then I thought about the pain and suffering that this young man must have been going through, brother, to look at his only option, his only option for freedom from his pain to end his life. And there's a lot of suffering that's happening right now, man. There's a lot of mental, physical suffering. And I know that there's people who are probably having suicidal ideation, thoughts of suicide, thoughts of just walking away from it. And I just want to just send, as you say, brother, I just want to send some energy. I just want to send some light and let people know who may be having these thoughts that, you know, find someone that you can talk to.
Absolutely.
Find someone that you can connect to that will honestly hear you and have a conversation that could perhaps inspire you to find a way, find a solution, another option. But get me, I'm not trivializing or minimizing anyone's pain or suffering. And I know that it sometimes, you know, a conversation doesn't help, but that's a start. Mm-hmm. And I just want to encourage everyone during this tumultuous time that we're all living in to connect, to stay connected. And that was just on my mind, but I just
man,
had to
I'm
get
so
that out.
I'm so glad, brother. But I'm so glad that you said that. And then to add on to that, you know, brother, these are the times, man, whereas we need one another. We need to check in on each other. There's something that if you get a signal, right, to whereas you say, I need to call such and such, although you all haven't spoken 5 years or 1 year, act on that. These are the times that we must act on these uploads and downloads that we received. And I do want to add on and say 2022 is the number 6 year. So that's vision, forethought, insight, clarity, and all of these different things. So with that being said, when we're thinking about people, just know that it's for a reason. And we need to, as you said, brother, move through the energy, call people, tell people you love them. Tell people, you know what I'm saying, how much you care, that they matter, right? A lot of people that liberate themselves, as I would say, you know, from this dimension, you know, at times they want to know that they matter, you know. So whenever we get a chance, we should let each other know that we matter, that we love each other, and that we're here for each other. So we give thanks for our sister, you know, Miss King, like, and that just the whole energy, man. I can't even, like, wow, just sending light, love, and wonderful vibes to her and her family.
That's beautiful, brother. And, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about the relationship that men have with men, right? They're boys, they're friends. And there's so many times that we want to say things that's on our hearts and that we're carrying, right, but we don't, right? Because right, as men, we're taught to make it through, make a way.
Yes.
Hold
suck it up.
Suck right. it up, man. Just man up. And so I just, you know, so that message you gave, I especially want the men in our audience to hear that. And if you have boys
right.
that you get a sense of going through things, and if you call
right.
them and you say, hey, how you doing? They say, oh, man, it's all good. Just say, well, what's all good? Talk to me. Don't just
right.
let it fall on Mel's words. Explore
right.
that a little bit. Because we have
yes.
to, you know, I'm a firm believer in that phrase, I am my brother's keeper.
And yes,
this,
I am my brother's keeper.
I am my brother's keeper, brother. So we have
right.
to keep each other. And that requires a little bit of exploration sometimes.
Yes,
someone says
does.
You know that, you know, there may be some sort of financial strain on the house, financial
right,
strain
right,
on the relationship,
right,
financial
right.
strain that them has father, if they're fathers, explore that.
Right.
Get them to talk, man, because I believe a lot of people don't know suicide rate amongst men and fathers, especially fathers.
Ooh.
Children, it's very
yes.
high.
Yes.
So,
man, it's through the roof.
It's through the roof. But these men, they don't talk often. But when
right.
they do talk, it's no shutting them down sometimes. So if you can find a way to open that valve, brother, to get them to talk, then
yes.
you've done a service to your friend,
yes.
yourself,
yes. yes. Yes, and then, too, I want to say, brother, last but not least, if there's any men, boys, people that's out there that do want to reach out to us through the show, please do not hesitate to reach out to us if you are dealing with some of the things that we are, you know, speaking on. And I'm a firm knower in men heal men. You know, and it's very important for, as you say, brothers to come together and just know that I got you, brother. I got you, brother. Because the women automatically heal us because we come from them. But men heal
right.
men. We need more men to deal with the energy of healing themselves so we can heal our boys and we can heal our families. So, yes.
Beautiful.
Onward and upward, brother. Yes.
Speaking about brothers healing brothers, we have a special guest, brother, that has been putting material out in the atmosphere that has been doing a lot of healing and a lot
yes.
of education. He calls
yes.
himself the son of the Newark Rebellion. We know that that was a part of the riots, that the racial riots that occurred in night summer of 1969. They call it the Long Hot Summer. Our
yes.
brother, his name is Talam Acey. He was raised by a single mother who his mother served as a member of the famed Amari Baraka's community organization. This brother's a special brother because this brother has been featured, brother. And I know you
yes.
know this, but that's
yes. yeah,
know
I know this brother. He's my brother. Come on with it.
He's been featured several times on BET. This brother has held center stage at the renowned Essence Festival.
Yes.
This brother was the personal guest of Maxine Waters at the 2007 and 2008 Young, Gifted, and Black panel at the Black Caucus. Brother, he has recited and given workshops worldwide, including Austria, Mexico, Germany, Jamaica,
yes.
Holland,
yes.
just to name a few. too. He has lectured and performed his work at over 100 colleges and universities, brother.
Come on.
I'm going to bring on our brother into the fold on the other side, brother Salam Asa on the other side.
I am with you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me well?
Yeah. We can hear you well, brother.
Yes. I am with you on the other side. I was looking at the long, hot summer because it was all of those riots. It was Atlanta, Buffalo, it was Cincinnati, Detroit, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, and we mentioned York, right? It was the year was 67.
67. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. 67.
Yes.
I must have been thinking about the year the Mets won the World Series.
Right. Yes. Man, it's good to have you, brother. It's good to have you,
brother. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm expecting a really, really fun, enjoyable, memorable. Elucidating?
Elucidating. Ooh, you're spoken like a poet. Ooh, the big word.
Brother, I just want to start off with a question, brother. In your song, Is You Is, you talk about change and growth in the relationships. And I really thought about, you know, the ideal of growth and the relationships. But first, I understand it as, you know, before you can have relational growth, you have to have personal growth. So my question to you, brother, just to start us off, you know, is how did poetry come into your life and what forces around you help you to grow and change to where everything I just read about you occurred? You just didn't do spoken word on one stage, brother. You've been around the world. So let's just talk about that for a second. But how did poetry come into your life? And then what forces around you help you to, you know, get some personal growth where you were able to expand your wings the way you've done?
All right. Well, first of all, I just want to compliment you on the poem that you quoted, that you mentioned, the Is You Is, because everybody wouldn't even know that. Like, I mean, there's certain poems, like if somebody said Market or somebody said Brotherly Love or a bunch of other pieces, you know, She Conjures, I'd be like, okay. But for you to mention that particular poem, which I probably only performed maybe 3 times, maybe 5, I don't know. You know what I mean? That's like some connoisseur level. That's like a connoisseur level mention. You know, and interestingly enough, I just wrote a love poem, because that one is called Is You Is. I just wrote a love poem that has the subtitle, Use This, You Is This. You know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting. And I haven't even... So I thank you for bringing up that poem. I remember the first time I did it, which I performed it in Miami, and that's why I recorded it for the CD as well. Mm-hmm. What got me into spoken word? I was born into it, man. My father and my mother were not together when I was growing up, but he loved his books. My mother had her books. So we had Langston Hughes. We had Dudley Randall. We had Arna Bontemps. We had, the anthologies with Claude McKay, with County Cullen, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, you know. So, I mean, that was in the house. That's what I used to learn to read, you know, those books. That's what my mother read to me when I was 2 and 3 years old, the bedtime stories. That's what I read when I was 4 and 5, when I was reading on my own. And in that same breath, my parents were part of a committee for Unified York, which was Emmanuel and Mary Baraka's organization. So as you could imagine, they had the Spirit House Movers. There was poetry in my life for that reason too. So growing up in that organization and being in those households and being and going to those events on weekends and such, that poetry was with me as well. And then add to that, right, I guess it's layered, right? So we had the books. We had the fact that my parents were in Amamu Amir Baraka's organization, and then another level to that were the records. So the record player in my house had next to it Oscar Brown Jr. It had The Last Poets. It had Gil Scott-Heron, Winter in America. You know, it was not even, he had, what was it, Gil Scott-Heron, The Midnight Band, the first hour of a new day, I think it was called. It's a slick double, like it's a slick album that opens up with a gorilla on it, and the gorilla's holding like an assault rifle, like a real gorilla.
Yes, right.
He's dressed in fatigues and he's got an assault rifle, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I grew up playing those things. So one thing that's a little bit different for me than most of the people who are in my circle world generation is that I grew up from the beginning. So a lot of cats got to know who the last poets were later in life when they themselves got to spoken word. Whereas I grew up knowing who they were. I grew up knowing who,
energy,
Scott Harris, who Oscar Brown Jr. was, you know, and obviously who America Rocker was. Yeah. So,
Powerful, brother. I want to add on to, first off, that was a great question, Brother Mark. I've always wanted to ask you this question, Kalam, you know, because oftentimes, you know, when people, you know, as artists, you know, certain people, you know, when they come and when they give, you know, the energy to you, like, man, you inspired me, you know, we have people to do that. However, not many artists have Stevie Wonder, and I'm quoting Stevie Wonder said, "You have so much inspired me with your spoken word." So how does it feel to have, or how did it feel to have Stevie Wonder, you know, mention you in that context that you inspired him?
First of all, amazing. So a lot of people's bios, no matter what genre they're in, when they write their bios, they talk about all the people they perform with and all the people they're associated with. And if you read my bio, the only person you see there is like him, in terms of artists, in terms of entertainers. Because number one, I hold him in such high regard, I don't know who else would actually belong after you mention him. Number one, right? And then number two, my thing was like, I don't want to be like, he opened for this person or he performed with these people or he was, you know what I mean? I could go like everybody else in bios and name all of the celebrity performers that I've been with, but do they even remember me? Like, am I in their bio? You know what I mean? Like, it's going so much around me, like, and he performed with Talon Ace, like, so not. But in the case of Stevie Wonder, that's an exception that has to be made. Number two, and then, of course, he clearly knows who I am, right? And then on top of that, my wife and I was having a discussion earlier when I was telling her, like, one of my regrets was I opened for Thelma Houston, and Barry Gordy and one of the Holland brothers were there, and they just, like, the Holland brother and Barry Gordy were just telling me how impressed they were with my writing. And I was telling my wife, it kills me that I didn't record that. I didn't write it down. I didn't ask if I could, you know, take one of those quotes and use it in my bio. Because now, you know, Barry Gordy is, of course, another person that's on that level that's just a huge deal between the fact that he ran Motown and the fact that he wrote a lot of those songs. And he's
a big
somebody who knows writing. And for him to just be, like, praising what I did. You know, I was like, you know, and I didn't record that. I didn't get it on video. I didn't do it. I mean, I had my phone with me. You know what I mean? We took a picture. You know what I mean? But I told her, but it doesn't matter in a way that I recorded it, because what's far more important than that is that he said it. You know, that this man was impressed. And not impressed with a songwriter or a singer, but he was impressed with a poet.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, brother. When you speak about your coming up and growing up, you were really in the atmosphere of artistry, writing, activism. Did you feel like your path was kind of laid out for you and this is what you had to do? Did you embrace it as sort of a gift that you felt was inside of you, or did you feel like this was a mission that you were obligated to do?
I don't even think you see it as mission. You think everybody else growing up like this too. You don't know that this is just, you know, different than what other people are going through. So when I get to school and people are, 'cause still to this day, if people are talking about Like I'm hearing an echo, y'all. Okay, well, I was with Red, and he was talking about football games that happened over the weekend. I don't know nothing about football. Never did. You know what I mean? I don't know nothing about sports. Like, I mean, I know how to – I can tell you when somebody made a touchdown. I got that.
Right.
But like, but so when I got to school as a kid, that's what people were talking about. They were talking about basketball and football and so on and so forth. And my thinking was more about music, you know, like, and I mean like jazz or blues. I was, you know, and spoken word poetry and written poetry, you know, the Harlem Renaissance poets. And it's always been that weird thing, because I thought everybody would be having this conversation and they were having different conversations, right? When I was a kid, I knew how to draw. So I would draw football helmets. I memorized how to draw them all, and I would draw them for my classmates, and that's the only way I kind of related to them in terms of sports, you know what I mean? And the other thing was, you know, I mean, I was, you call it belligerent, you know what I mean? So I could relate violently, you know, because I don't know. I was just, you know, in that type of situation.
That's
so
very diplomatic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was combative, so I could relate in that sense. I could relate in the sense of drawing, and all kinds of music I like. So if they like music, we could discuss music. I mean, I'm far deeper, especially as I get older and older, into blues and jazz. But the thing is, the child that learns how to walk doesn't think he's doing anything special. You think everybody else is walking.
Right.
That was just like walking, you know what I mean? I learned to read by reading poets. I didn't know that everybody else wasn't being taught to read to Langston Hughes' books.
Right. It's so powerful, man. It's so powerful, brother. Just the energy, the synergy, man, and you know, this vibration between the three of us. I wanted to ask you, you know, with 2022, you know, being here, we're in this energy. However, past year, you know, and you can let me know the journey, you know, past year you went on the journey to deal with, or not even deal with, to move through, you know, a project that you are now, that you've morphed into, you know, manifestation. And could you tell us about this new book, this new project, and how did that come about? Because the connection is everything you're saying about the poets that you grew up listening to and reading and all of these things, a lot of these poets and a lot of this energy is in your new project. So can you tell the people what it is and what to expect?
Yeah, man. You know, the project has a lot to do with inertia. And they taught us about inertia and the kinetic energy back in high school. And this inertia was just this energy that was building and building. And kinetic energy, it had already taken off, right? It was moving. And the reason why I say it has a lot to do with inertia is because I talked about how I got into spoken word and poetry and how I, you know, got into jazz and blues, you know, as a study. And I had all of that, you know what I mean? And it was inertia, but I would credit you, O'Shea, and Father Avi for inspiring the new work in two different ways. In his case, in Father Avi's case, from Lost Prophets, our elder, our Baba, in his case, he just went, like, I'm the type of cat that I could, like, when I met Stevie Wonder, he gave me his number, and we never talked on the phone. We never, you know, and part of it is my follow-up, part of it is my style, part of it is, you know, in a lot of cases, a lot of friendships, relationships, and not necessarily in the case of Stevie Wonder, but a lot of other cases, just doing things innocently that turn people off or make people want to distance themselves. But with Father Avdi, there was nothing that I could do that created a distance. You know what I mean? It was just always love. And if I didn't call him, he was going to call me. Like, we joke, like me and you, saying that his whole thing is, you're going to get this knowledge. You're going to get this work. You know what I mean? There's no way around it. You're going to get this love. I'm going to love you regardless. And it's funny because that's how the book ends, in terms of his is the last interview in the book. So the book is about reverence. my reverence for seven spoken word artists. I call it Kissing Seven Rings, right? Mm-hmm. So it's Kamal Daoud, who I spoke with in L.A. It's Abby Odun Oyele from The Last Poets, who I met with in Philadelphia. It's Umar Ben Hassan from The Last Poets that I met with in Flint, Michigan. It is S. Pearl Sharp that I met with in Los Angeles. It's Kalamu Ya Salaam that I met with in New Orleans just before one of the hurricanes in August. It is Camille Yarbrough, who I talked to. She was in New York, but because of the pandemic, she didn't want me to come up there and speak with her directly. So that's the only one that I didn't actually travel to get to. And then it's Father Ambi, right? And I believe that's seven. That's the seven rings,
yeah.
I believe, right? It's Kamal Daoud in L.A. It's Abby Odun Oyele that I met in Philly. So Umar Ben Hassan, S. Pearl Sharp, Kalamu Ya Salaam, Camille Yarbrough, and Father Ambi. That's the seven rings, I call it, that I kiss, because that's where my reverence is. I was looking at Marvel and the whole Black Panther thing, and then they had the whole thing with Thanos, and he had the whole Infinity Stones, and it was six of them, right? And it was power and reality and mind and soul and space and time. Now, I know them now. I'm not a big comic book fan, but those were their six stones. I had seven rings to kiss. And I traveled to do that. And that reverence, by reverence, I mean, it was important that I presented it right. So this book is called Permission to Speak, about going, traveling around this country, talking to those elders, kissing those seven rings. I invested as much as I could, or as much as made sense. So no expense spares. This is my end game. So it's not a paperback book. I've written seven books prior to this. They were all paperbacks. This is a hardcover book. This has got full color pictures, and I don't mean dot matrix looking pictures. I mean real photos on photo paper, right in the middle. It's got the gold foil printed on the spine when you take the cover off. I mean everything, and each one is shrink wrapped, individually shrink wrapped. It's like spare no expense. But those are benefits of the book. But I mean, those are features of the book. The benefit could be summed up in one word, which is inspiration. Okay? Mm. So it's intended to be inspiring.
Mm.
What I mean by that is, if you're a poet, you want to get fuel for your next poetry collection. If you are a musician, you want to get fuel for your next album. And it goes on and on. We discuss sculptures. We discuss painters. We discuss relationships, being a couple. You know, if you're a couple, there's inspiration. These cats are 70 and 80 years old. You know what I mean? They've got some knowledge. They had knowledge to share and to transfer. Knowledge transfer, KT. If you are a lover of history, if you're a lover of cultural history, like I am myself, 3 o'clock yesterday morning, I was up watching on Amazon the documentary about Bob Kaufman, who was a poet from New Orleans. Who was based in San Francisco. So I was up, I was up 3-4 in the morning looking at that. So, I mean, if you were that type of person, and, about my whole book thing, I just finished up and got, right now I'm reading Dizzy Gillespie, and just finished one of the Miles Davis books. Oh, I just finished the Howlin' Wolf book. I mean, but that's my thing. So if you're like that, if you're a lover of cultural history, music, poetry, so on and so forth, then this, right, that's being presented, Permission to Speak, it's going to be heaven. It's going to be
Kalam, was that your motivation to archive, to make certain that people knew? Because this is a huge endeavor, brother. So when you embarked on this, man, what was going through your thoughts, brother? Was I have to archive, I have to make sure people know these artists? What was the underlying motivation?
I'm glad you asked that, because as I mentioned earlier, there was two things that hit that inertia that changed it from, static to kinetic. And the other thing, in addition to Father Andy's position in his love, was O'Shea and me, our interactions and him and learning about how he brought different artists to L.A., how he took care of them, how he treated, in some cases, treated them better than they have been treated in a while. You know what I mean? And he documented these meetings, and he talked to them, and he stayed in contact with them and made sure they were okay. And he did it for years and years and years, right? And then I'm thinking, well, what am I doing? You know, with being somebody who studied poetry since he was a child and who's interacted with so many people, if O'Shea is doing this, shouldn't I be doing my part too? That's the other part of it. You know what I mean? That's the other part. And like I said, spare no expense. It's about the reverence of those seven people. Yes, I'm telling those. I want to make sure those seven stories are known. You know, there's an authentic artist, and then there's a dilettante. And I'm trying to make it clear to younger cats and some of the other cats in our generation that, you know, if you're a dilettante, just be that. If you're really authentic, then you're going to need to know these things. You need to know these cats. You need to know about these seven rings.
Speak, brother, speak. Yes, brother, yes.
I love that. Because there's such a disconnect when you talk about, I'm going to use the rap industry for an example, man. There's so many great artists that preceded the artists that are on the scene now, but you know, what most people don't know about the greats that really paved the way and the struggles that they had to go through and the trials that they had to endure and that they didn't have those things. And so
O'Shea was just talking about Jimmy Spicer just about 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Jimmy Spicer was Super Rhymes.
Super Rhymes, right?
He wrote the Bubble Rhymes. He wrote Super Rhymes.
Yes.
He wrote what was it called? Cash Money. So when the people so like Cash Money, right? That's the inspiration of Cash Money Brothers, I guess, was New Jack City, which was used again for different crews. I think there were Cash Money rap crews, not just in New Orleans, which became the famous ones, but I think there were crews in other places. And then he wrote, you know, in the Wu-Tang with Cream, that Cash was everything around me. They took that dollar bill, y'all. That came from Jimmy Spicer. Jimmy Spicer was the artist that Russell Simmons was managing before there was a Def Jam, you know, Def Jam Records. Before there was, you know, like Run DMC, it was Russell Simmons managing Jimmy Spicer and Curtis Blow, you know? So he's just one example. And of course, we know that the three paragons, which Grandmaster Caz and Kool Moe Dee and Melly Mel.
Melly Mel. Yes.
And I want to give an honorable mention to Dick Boutique also who was in the message. That's not always clear to people that it wasn't just Melly Mel in the message.
Right. So rich, man. This conversation, Mark and Talon, so rich, man.
It is, brother, because it's an important conversation, because if we don't know, who our ancestors were, and they're not ancestors yet, but if we don't know who paved the way, what they had, what their artistry was all about, what was the motivation for their artistry, then you're just kind of out there just floating and just trying to create something, but not looking at what came before you as the blueprint. And so, I can't wait to get my... Brother, it sounds like it's going to be a spiritual experience, brother. Just the way you describe the book, it reminds me of those old hymnals, brother. Just the beauty of it. So it's going to be a wonderful.
It reminds you of what?
It's like those old hymnals,
reminds
brother.
You of what?
In the church, brother, the beauty of those books, the way they were designed, they were just very well crafted. And so, as you describe your book,
it is, man. And they had fun with me. They had so much fun with me. I remember, I feel like I brought a six-pack to Kamal when we sat down to meet. And I opened up, he looked at it, man. He's like, he realized that I was trying to bring him something light, you know what I mean? But it wasn't. It was like a lager. And that motherfucker, it looked like it tastes like earwax. And then we take that to Umar Ben Hassan, who every time I called him, he'd be like, who is this again? Who is this? And then, you know, and you can't take it personally, right? Because you're talking to a paradigm. So you just got to be like, I got to tell him who I am every time. And then it gets crazy because he starts calling me. And then he'll call me and say, who is this? I never heard of that. How do you call somebody else and say, who?
Oh, and then, I'm a great elder. Yeah.
There's a lot of those stories, but like the one that kind of, just so that I don't keep going too long with this, was Abiel Dune has a session at his house every couple of weeks where people come and do poetry. And since COVID began, he's been doing it virtually. So I joined last week or about a week and a half ago. And it's the funniest thing because he, like, we just sat down and interviewed and whatever. And he's like, all right, so, and it reminds me of Umar because I kept showing him pictures of times we were together when I was at his house. You know what I mean? So the same thing with Abiel Dune. He's like, you look so familiar. And I'm like, yeah, we were together in Minneapolis back in like 2002. And then he's like, yeah. I was like, and then we featured for the National Black United Front in D.C. back in, you know, about 10 years ago. He's like, oh, yeah. And but here's the funniest thing. If you're on a Zoom meeting, your name is right there on the meeting, right? So my name, Talam, is right there. And after we go through everything of when we met and how we, different times we featured together, he keeps calling me to him. And I'm like, it's spelled right there. And I just had to answer to it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a great answer.
That's what I am right now. That's why I'm
I love it. I love it. And that's what it's about,
there's
man.
No e right there's
yes.
no E.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Right. To Liam. That's what it's about, man. For the go ahead.
No, I'm still laughing about that. I apologize.
Yeah.
No,
it's dope. It's right there. And it's like when you're dealing with the great elders for the young people, when you're dealing with, the people who've paved the way in this art form, it's like you have to be okay with, like, them mispronouncing your name or them .. or .. And when you, universe willing, get seasoned in your 70s and 80s and 90s, you may not, you never know. You'll be doing the same thing. But it's a matriculation of life, and that's what I honor. I honor the elders in that energy because as my wife has a poem called That Shall Be Us Someday. That shall be us someday.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But here's the difference. Because I know that they're older and venerable, right? We respect, admire, and love them. But I'm always wondering, are they playing with me? are they serious? Kalamo New Orleans. He gave me a book called It's called From a Bend in the River. Now, the book that we're talking about that I'm putting out next month is called Permission to Speak. So he gave me this From a Bend in the River when I interviewed him. So when I came down to format Permission to Speak, I was like, From a Bend in the River is a hardcover book. It's got a beautiful cover. It's, I forgot the dimensions. But whatever the dimensions are for this book were the same dimensions that I used for Permission to Speak. This is a hardcover book just like Permission to Speak. I mean, there's so many similarities because I looked at this book and was like, yeah, this is something, I want to do. This is how I want to present this book. You know what I mean? Permission to Speak, the differences are the color pictures in the middle on the photo paper, and the fact that everything is shrink-wrapped, But other than that, it was taken kind of from what he did. So when I'm telling him about the book after the fact about how I formatted it and whatever, he was like, oh, man, that's really nice. You doing all that? And I'm like, but he got to know that he just gave me a book that's just like that. Like, is he playing with me? He got to know that I'm basing it on what he just gave me.
Right.
Like, is he serious? Is he playing with me? Like, are they just testing me to see if I got, like, an ego issue or something? I love them.
Right.
That's what I mean by kissing the ring.
Yeah.
I respect the level. I know that these are elders.
When you were having these conversations, was there a common theme that emerged, sort of a collective consciousness of a particular subject matter or thought that you found running through your conversations, these giants?
You know, those conversations were all, number one, the simple answer was America Rocket came up a lot. And yeah, America Rocket came up probably in every interview. So that was interesting. But the theme in terms of, so that's a subject. America Rocket as a subject came up in every interview. Mm-hmm. But the rhythm of the interviews, the rhythm of talking to people and it feeling like you're talking to someone in your family. Like it felt like elders trying to pass something down to a nephew or a grandson. You know what I mean? Mm. Let me not say grandson because they're not that. I mean, I want to make it seem like they're like super old. I mean, they're our elders, so passing it down to their nephew or to their son. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it felt. You know, and it felt so personal. It felt like something that had happened before. You know, I haven't mentioned this. The more you trigger thoughts in my mind, the more I'm going to mention things that I probably never mentioned or hardly ever mentioned in my life. But one of the things I found interesting when I was younger was James Baldwin. And I'll put that in context because James Baldwin is an interesting subject to me every day, all day. If you were to look at my Instagram feed, you'll see that I post random pictures of James Baldwin like once every month or two. You know what I mean? For no other reason than the fact that it's James Baldwin. But what was interesting about him in this particular context was that when he was younger, of course, he lived in Harlem. And who also lived in Harlem at the time that he was younger were all of these people who came from the Black Renaissance, the Harlem Renaissance.
Absolutely.
So County Color was still there. And you know, the Paul Lawrence Dunbars, and you had Zora Neale Hurston coming in and out. You had Langston Hughes still there when he was growing up, you know what I mean? And he was going to these people's houses. You know, he was looking up to Richard Wright, you know, he was going around to these different poets and he was learning from them.
Right.
And I can't imagine the type of conversations that he might have had with Langston Hughes, right? The same thing with I learned as I was writing this book that with Gwendolyn Brooks, I didn't realize that the Southside Arts Center was community center was a place that I used to do poetry in Chicago, in Michigan in 35th, I think it was, around there. And I didn't realize this was a historic building and that this is where Gwendolyn Brooks started. And not only was that where she started, but that Langston Hughes used to be there and he was mentoring her there. You know what I mean? So I'm saying that these conversations that you find in the book are probably similar to conversations that happened then, conversations that people had with B.B. King and Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker, you know, when they were coming up, right? And then, right, because Howlin' Wolf looked up to Sonny Boy Williamson 1 and 2, and, you know, Vice Miller and Sonny Boy Williamson when he was coming up. And then as he gets older, you know, you got people like Buddy Guy looking up to him, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So these conversations, speaking of Buddy Guy, my wife just bought me, she just bought me Buddy Guy's autobiography, so that's my next one. these things keep coming up. These conversations probably been, they've probably been having these conversations on the slave ship and long before.
It just came in. It's all about the conversation, brother. I do have a question for you. But just on the note of the conversation, I remember one day Jahaz Zainabu said, "The access to power is through the conversation." I never forgot that. I want to ask you, brother, in terms of the poets, man, the artists, like the young poets or the poets of this generation, man, do you feel that they are pushing the art form forward or do you feel that, you know, what's your take on it, brother? Have you had any feedback or insight of what you're seeing unfold?
I think that, I don't know how this is going to sound. I know how I mean it in my mind. I mean it in a beautiful way. But I think that, I don't think they have a lot. They've been given a lot to work with because sometimes people become copies of copies of copies of copies, and they don't really get to see like some of the more authentic cats. I mean, a lot of the cats that were doing it as peers of ours don't even do it anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, I can name a lot of names of people who, some of them passed away, but some of them are still here, but they're not out there like that. And they were very original. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, so when you start taking copies of copies of guys, because what I've seen from a lot of younger cats is like, I'm listening to their poem, their work, and I'm like, wow, this is over-reliance on this or an over-reliance on that. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, there's an over-reliance. I have a line that's in one of the last poems I wrote that said, if you listen to me, I can usually be caught near the b-ball court, sipping a quart of something that wasn't bought in the store. So there's quart, quart, and quart, which are three different words with three different spellings, but they all sound the same. They're homily. I mean,
right.
I've seen people just make that the basis of their career. Like the whole, you know, every poem is just all about homilies. Without
wow.
being about rhythm and like complex rhyme structure and, you know, really working metaphors or when to use
right.
the simile or when to rhyme and when
right.
not to rhyme. And
right.
so
right.
it's like, you know, it's like you're working with 50 weapons or 50 tools.
Mm.
And it seems like some people are only, you know, using two or three because they don't know anything.
Mm.
And they're over relying on those two or three.
Right.
Well, what do you think of
this? Oh, wait. Oh, I apologize.
Generation.
What I did leave out, though, and we had this conversation before, is a lot of young cats, and now I'm down here, you know, in Atlanta, as you are, and I'm seeing young cats who are interested in
yes, they are.
What they can do to improve. They want,
yes,
they want
they
you
are.
To listen to what they're doing, and they want to hear their input on what they could change, what they can add. You know,
yes.
I'm hearing cats talking about going back to iTunes and you know, Apple Music to Tidal and Google Music and all that to listen to old stuff that we did, you know,
yeah.
and then coming back with questions about those things. So
yeah.
I got mad confidence in young cats, and I'm not
yes.
even trying to get in the same. I'm not even trying to get in the same lane like that. You know what I mean? I
nice.
Just want to.
Nice.
I'm only kind of coming back to kind of show them what was missing from. The fact that if they copy somebody, you copy somebody, you copy somebody, well, let me show you something a little bit more authentic. Maybe you're missing a little bit of this because I'm not in that race. I ran my race.
Right.
I did. I placed, and I placed well in it.
Right.
So I'm good. You know?
That's what I'm talking about.
That's beautiful because the fact is that there's so much material that's available to draw from to get
yeah.
inspirational, to get emotional content, and, you know, just intellectual content from, because over the past 20 years, there's been so much that has happened. And sometimes they say, well, these young people, they don't know a struggle. Like, they don't struggle. They don't have experiences. Man, there's been so much that has happened over the past 20 years, especially over the past 3 or 4 years that we've been experiencing, that if they just have guidance on
mm-hmm.
how to write
yeah.
what they're experiencing, because the content is there, right? They
right.
just have to be able put it together in a way that they really are expressing themselves, that, you know, once that expression is put out there, it's going to move other people, like the artists that you've been speaking to, man, the you know, the Paul Lawrence Dunbar, the Langston Hughes, the Mary Baracas, you know, on and on. So,
if they were to go back to that Last Poets first album, which was called The Last Poets, they would
mm-hmm.
learn just from that album alone so much. And
mm-hmm.
if they were to take that
mm-hmm.
album and then also go back to Camille Yarbrough's album, The Iron Pot Cooker,
yeah.
just those two. I mean, I could go on
yes.
and on and on, but just taking those two as an example, that The Last Poet's first album, which was called The Last Poet, and Camille Yarbrough's album, Iron Pot Cooker, which is like a predecessor to like all the Lauryn Hill, Jill Scott.
Absolutely,
and
it is.
Erykah Badu, like it's a predecessor to that. To listen
right.
to those, they would gain so much extra information, so much added information.
So much. And that's on YouTube.
Yeah.
So they could go through that energy and, you know, as he said, you could keep going from there. You could go to the Watch Prophets 1971 album, Rapping Black in a White World. You could go to Kamau Daoud 1997 release, Lamert Part. You could go,
yeah, yeah,
you could go
yeah.
on and on and on. You could, I mean, but it's there. And I do feel that, you know, writers write and poets out there, I could tell that this generation of poets, a lot of them do not read other poetry, and So I just encourage young people out there to, you know, read other poets, like to listen to other poets, to, it's very important.
And Google Amiri Baraka, his poem called Dope. Google that poem, Dope. And there's a newer piece from the oldest of the people that we're speaking about, the oldest, the elder that was in the book is Father Amdi. He has a newer piece called Freedom Groove. Man, yes, I got that on my playlist that I walk with. You know what I mean? But look up Freedom Groove, and then it'll say feature in the Watch Prophets. Google that. That is incredible.
So when we speak about younger poets, let me ask you, in your poetry career, brother, was there a moment, a significant moment that you can remember when you said, oh, this is something I'm going to do? This piece seemed to resonate. I think I'm on to something. Was there a moment or a piece that when you delivered it, you said, this is what I love? Or I know this is something, I got something special here.
I recall hearing other people. I recall so I've been writing since I was younger, since I was a child. Mm-hmm. I came up writing. Mm-hmm. At some point, it became really easy to branch into like rap and hip hop and all that, because that's what I was doing. And that kind of bridges the gap between me growing up off of poetry and spoken word and what other young cats had starting to get into. When I got back into spoken word, so Jessica Caremore had been on the Apollo. She won it like 5 times straight. Love Jones came out. I was like, oh, so we back to it.
Right.
You know, like, oh, all right, I'm ready. I've been waiting. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so hearing some of the cats like Roger Bonaire Gar, hearing Jamal St. John, hearing Sarah Jones, hearing Stacey Ann Chen, you know, back in the day. So this is the 90s. This is the mid to late 90s. I'm hearing these cats. And I'm like, yo, I could really do this. I could kill this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see myself way into this. Like, you know, this is what I've been training for since I was 3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So listening to them, I was like, oh. So it wasn't so much something that I wrote, because the first time I started hearing these cats, I went out into the car and started writing poems in my head. I couldn't even stay in the show. And I stayed out there. I mean, the show ended. People were getting in their cars and going home. I was still sitting, like, my car is like the last car in the parking lot, because I'm sitting there writing my poems in my head so that when I show up to the next show, it's on. You know what I mean?
Right.
Nice.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, this is so full, man. I know that we, you know, are coming down to the fourth quarter with under 2 minutes to go, but Brother Talon, man, it's just, man, this is very, very rich, brother. I mean, the conversation and just to just see you, I'm so excited about this project, and I'm extra excited
so
as well, because I had the pleasure to, you know, to add the forward. So, you know, I was honored that you asked me to write the forward. So,
I read the forward. Your picture is on the back cover. your picture is me. It's you, me, Father Amdi, and Umar Ben Hassan. So it's like the East and the West, you know what I mean?
Wow.
So
that's
on the back cover. There's a beautiful picture of me, you, and Kamal Dawood on the east side. And you're mentioned throughout the book, because I don't know how not to. I mean, I know people in this world, people deserve flowers, but people hide the flowers because they don't want people to get what they deserve.
Right.
You know?
Come on, brother.
But, I mean, I appreciate your influence in terms of what you've done for the elders, and you've kind of shown me the way to go in terms of how to give back and how to treat them and how to revere them and put them in the forefront to the best that I can. So you've helped me with that. And again, like you said, you wrote the forward, and we've had a lot of conversations that have been extremely helpful.
Yes, you know? Brother. Man, that's beautiful, man.
That's beautiful, man. I mean, I'm going to whip it out and read it again. Like
my wife. Brother Talal, when I told
Mark,
my wife.
Man, Mark, I really appreciate you welcoming me to the show.
Brother, it's an absolute pleasure, but I really enjoyed this time. When I told my wife that you were going to be on, she told me a story. She said she was at this store, I think it was called Hutchins or something like that in Pasadena, and she brought your CD. And then you said to her, oh, I heard about you. I heard some good things about you. And she said she left that store feeling like, I made it.
Man, I remember
this great artist heard about you. I must be doing something right.
your wife made me realize something back, I think it was like in 2000, 2001 or something, which was that all these cats who were dope and been doing pause on stage for 3, 5, 7 years, when somebody mm-hmm. steps up that hasn't really gotten into it, but they were born to do it, gets up on stage, it highlights the fact that even though this person's done it for 7 years or 5 years or whatever they've done it for, they don't hold a candle to somebody who was organically meant to do it. And, ooh, and I learned yeah. that because I was in the poetry lounge. It was like 2001, I think. And
nice.
Your wife, she was a young lady, comes in, and she has her girlfriends with her. And I could tell mm-hmm. her girlfriends don't care nothing about no poetry. But she mm-hmm. did. And she wanted to do a poem. I think they were all going out for the night. They were going to go and you know, have a drink or something. So she must have been like early 20s, I think. I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. That's how it looked. But right. she came in there. And she was like, and if I remember correctly, she said she had never done a poem before. It was a poetry night. Then she said she hadn't performed before. She just wanted to do a poem. It might have been her birthday or something. And she got up on stage and did a poem, and it blew away almost everything that happened.
Nice.
It was just
nice.
So, it was one of those things like food, like I tell you about Georgia Lee. I remember
yeah.
the first time I saw her. So yeah. the same thing with
yeah.
Thea. Same thing
yes.
with Thea. I remember
yes.
the first time
I
saw her,
it.
That she read a poem,
yes.
that she rocked the crowd.
Yes.
It was amazing. It changed my
wow.
whole perspective on what is organic and what isn't.
Ooh. Nice.
I know that was a good one, huh, Mark? You didn't know that was about to happen.
You should be listening to the show, but if not, I'm definitely going to share that with her. Brother, we got about 2 minutes, brother. I want you to just let everyone know, Brother Talam, how they can connect with you, how they can get this book, how they can
yeah.
learn more about you. If they have not for some reason, if they've been hiding under a rock and they haven't heard about you, how they can connect with you, brother. What's the best way to connect with you, Brother Talam?
I'm on probably IG more than anything. Every day I wake up, I'll put like 4 or 5 statements to try to motivate my life, and I hope it motivates other people, you know, to try to take them in a positive direction for the day. So that's every day. So my Instagram is my name, Talam AC, which is, they tell me I got too many A's in my name. So let's just say it slow then. TalamAcey, right? I don't know if that helps, you know, TalamAcey is my name.
Right.
And that's my Instagram, AC Fans. So my last name, AceyFans. On Facebook, which I wish I hadn't done. I wish it was AC Family or something like that, but that's what we were doing back then when I made
mm-hmm.
that. And I wish I could just give y'all my number, but it wouldn't even help.
Don't do it.
And that book, the book will be on my website, which you can, it's also talamac.com, but because people have problems with so many A's, you can also get to my page using karmapoet.com, KarmaPoet.com. You can get to that same page that way. I haven't even put the book up there yet. I'll do it in the next couple of weeks. The book won't even be for sale until late February. And the book, just so you know, just so we set the proper expectation, the book will be $40 when it comes out. Like I said, hardcover, beautiful color, overlay, beautiful color pictures on the inside, foiled stamp on the thing. Those are benefits. Think inspiration. And I'll tell you this,
man,
I can tell
yeah.
you it's $40, but after you buy that book, years from now, You won't remember how much you paid for it, but you will remember that it was a book that changed your life.
Oh, and on that note, we got like 10 seconds left, and we going to float, as Baba Jalal and Meridian of the Last Poets say. On that note, we going to float. Thank you, Brother Talon, man. We appreciate the energy, man. And thank you, Mark.
Shay. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate it. Thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. We'll see everyone on the other side. Thank you, Brother Talon. We appreciate you, brother.
All right,
appreciate
you all. Peace.